Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we hear parts of two interviews on the topic of UN Agenda 21 from past guest Rosa Corey, author of Behind the Green Mask, and journalist Stacy Lynn. But first, let's look at some of the stories in other news. Our hearts and thoughts go out to the victims and the victims' families of these bombings. Here's an interesting story. Battlefield, USA. De facto state of martial law declared in Boston. Pictures from the war zone. Really interesting photos of empty streets in the middle of the day. This is by Max Slavo. As news of the incident in Watertown, Massachusetts spread, police from all over the Northeast converged once again on Boston. Along with them, there were elements of the National Guard and U.S. military. Section 1031 of the controversial National Defense Authorization Act of 2012 effectively declares the U.S. a battlefield, suspends the U.S. Constitution, and essentially allows the president, through the Department of Homeland Security and the U.S. military, to deploy assets in this war zone as he sees fit. Section 1031 of the NDAA bill, which itself defines the entirety of the U.S. as a battlefield, allows American citizens to be snatched from the streets, carted off to a foreign detention camp, and held indefinitely without trial. The bill states that, quote, any person who has committed a belligerent act faces indefinite detention, but no trial or evidence has to be presented. The White House merely needs to make the accusation. Here's another story. Obama signs bill killing anti-corruption, pro-transparency Stock Act provisions. Last week, the Senate and House passed a secret, barely debated bill to limit the scope and effectiveness of the Stock Act that was passed last year to limit corruption and promote transparency of public officials' financial activity. The purpose of the Stock Act, which stands for Stop Trading on Congressional Knowledge, is described by the Center of Responsive Politics. Here it is. The Stock Act, which was passed by Congress a year ago, requires online posting of the personal financial disclosure statements that lawmakers and congressional candidates, the president, vice president, members of the cabinet, high-ranking congressional executive branch staff file each year. The data is supposed to be made available in machine-readable format that is ready to download this October. And at the time of this its passage, Obama had this to say. It's a good first step, he said, after the passage. And in months ahead, Congress should do even more to help fight the destructive influence of money in politics and rebuild the trust between Washington and the American people. Watchdog groups had hailed the passage of the bill last year as it had wide bipartisan support and satisfied the public need for added transparency. However, just months after the 2012 election, Congress furtively stripped the bill of major powers. Both chambers of Congress quickly and near silently approved the repeal legislation at the end of last week by unanimous consent, just before heading home to their districts. Well, I wonder why they would do that. But more importantly, why are they allowed to vote on something like this? The Senate advanced the bill Thursday by unanimous consent, without debate or even briefly describing what it would do. The House signed off on the bill Friday, using the same approach. President Obama completed this deception by signing this new bill, which stripped key provisions from the Stock Act and rolled back a lot of the progress that the original bill made in promoting transparency and open government. The bill was signed without any cameras or fanfare, which is in stark contrast to the very public signing of the actual Stock Act. It seems President Obama was glad to parade around the signing of the pro-transparency bill, but was not so open about his reversal of the most important parts of it a year later. Open Secrets describes the key provisions stripped out of the bill and labels this action, quote, a reversal of the Stock Act. The elements of the Stock Act that were removed include creation of searchable, sortable disclosure of the information contained in reports, even for Congress, the President, Vice President, the President's Cabinet, and congressional candidates. Requiring electronic filing for Congress, the President, Vice President, the President's Cabinet, congressional candidates, as well as high-level executive and congressional branch employees. Even images of the staffers' filings will not be available for viewing on the web. The original bill was passed for providing transparency of records to be searchable online, applying to staffers, high-level employees, and this reversal, signed by President Obama, will make it even harder to hold public officials accountable and give them less requirements for disclosure. Well, as many listeners know, the Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act passed the House and is in the Senate. Many of the people who oppose it are the internet companies such as Reddit, Mozilla, Namecheap, Gandhi.net, and a lot of others who have come out strong against the bill. And more than 70 cybersecurity experts and academics sent a joint letter opposing CISPA last year. The groups and people who have opposed have devoted their careers to building security technologies, protecting networks, computers, and critical infrastructure against attacks of many stripes. Last week, 34 civil liberty groups sent a letter out opposing CISPA in its current form. And the newest addition to CISPA opposition, the White House, which issued a veto threat. Representative Rogers is adamant that no sensitive personal information or email content will be collected under the bill and then sent to the federal government. Under questioning from Representative Paulus, Rogers said, again, zeros and ones, hundreds of millions of times a second in patterns. It has nothing to do with content, nothing. First of all, of course, it's zeros and ones. This is the article. That's how information is passed in the digital environment, whether it's content or not. If Rogers is going to propose fundamentally changing privacy on the internet, he ought to know that the contents of email are transferred with zeros and ones and patterns. Second, if Rogers really meant this, there's an easy solution. Exclude the content of communications from the bill. Companies would not be able to transfer the content of anyone's email under the bill, whether in the form of zeros and ones. Representative Paulus spoke candidly during the hearing about some of the detrimental effects CISPA could have on internet users' trust in online services. This directly hurts the confidence of internet users. Internet users, if this were to become law, would be much more hesitant to provide their personal information, even if assured under the terms of use that it will be kept personal, because the company would be completely indemnified if they voluntarily gave it to the U.S. state government. Representative Rogers was not convinced, asserting this would not be a problem. He's wrong. CISPA gives legal immunity to companies who share your information under the bill with no exception for privacy policies or user agreements that promise to protect your privacy. Even worse, core privacy laws such as the Privacy Act, Cable Communications Policy Act, the Wiretapped Act, the Video Privacy Protection Act, and the Electronic Communications Privacy Act will be decimated by CISPA, robbed of their power to protect you when it comes to this so-called cybersecurity sharing. Here is another story. You may have seen this. Before the blast, West Fertilizer's Monsanto lawsuit by Alexandra Berzon. As details emerged about the Texas fertilizer plant that was the site of Wednesday's last week fatal explosion and fire, a few bits of information can be gleaned from a 2007 lawsuit that the plant's owners filed against agribusiness giant Monsanto. The suit filed as a potential class action in U.S. District Court for the Western District of Texas claimed that Monsanto had artificially inflated prices for its herbicide Roundup through anti-competitive actions. The suit did not relate to storing fertilizer, believed to be at the root of Wednesday's blast. The suit was filed by Texas Grain Storage, Inc. The company now calls itself West Fertilizer Company. In the suit, the company said that it was started in 1957 as a grain storage business by Plasek family in the town of West Texas. It later built a small fertilizer blend plant and started selling fertilizer to area farmers. In 1970, it started selling other agricultural products, including some from Monsanto. And by 1997, it had struck a deal with Monsanto to directly purchase Roundup each year. A court filing in 2008 indicated that Texas Grain Storage recently had been sold. Emil Plasek is listed as a former owner. Texas Grain Storage said it monitored the Roundup, stored it in a stainless steel tank through a telephone connected to the tank. Many documents in the case are sealed, and the public documents don't reveal the names of the plant's then-current owners. Texas corporation records list the president of the company as Donald R. Adar, and show a business operating as Adar Grain, Inc. at the same address. Monsanto responded to the Texas Grain's complaint by saying the company didn't have standing to bring the case and was barred by the statute of limitations. Thursday, a Monsanto spokesman said, the long-dormant lawsuit filed by Texas Grain had nothing to do with fertilizer or the operation of the West Texas plant. And here's another story on the Vigilant Citizen site. Why do we often witness tragedy and senseless deaths during the second half of April? The list of violent events that occur during this period is simply staggering. Here are some of them. April 19, 1993, Waco Massacre. An FBI assault led to the burning down of the compound of a sect named Branch Davidians, killing 76 men, women, and children. April 19, 1995, Oklahoma City bombing, 168 people killed. April 20, 1999, Columbine High School Massacre, 13 people murdered, 21 injured. April 16, 2007, Virginia Tech Massacre, 32 killed, 17 injured. April 16, 2013, Boston Marathon explosions. April 18, 2013, fertilizer plant explosion, Texas. 5 to 15 killed. Notice that this event occurred almost exactly 20 years after the Waco Massacre, which is in the same area. Also on April 16, 1947, a ship loaded with ammonium nitrate docked at the port of Texas City and erupted in flames, causing a massive explosion that killed approximately 576 people. There were many other violent occurrences that happened during that time period. In fact, CNN published an article in 2011 titled, "What Is It About Mid-April and Violence in America?" discussing the events that occur in mid-April. Sadly, the article only bashed conspiracy theorists that basically said, quote, "If you look for answers further than mass media, you are crazy and potentially dangerous." And this is getting into an area where Jordan Maxwell, Matthew Deluz, and other guests that we've had on the show discussed in detail. And the article continues, "The end of April, a time of human sacrifice. Throughout many centuries and across many civilizations, the second half of April has always been a time of blood sacrifice. The worship of Baal took many names, Enlil, Moloch, etc., and spread across several civilizations. Being a sun god and a god of fertility, rituals celebrating Baal took place after the vernal equinox, a time of rebirth, and often involved human sacrifice. Although the observance of these rituals was sometimes condemned by religious movements, it never truly disappeared. The religion of the god Baal was widely accepted among the ancient Jews, and although it was put down at times, it was never permanently stamped out. Kings and other royalty of the 10 biblical tribes worshipped the god. The ordinary people ardently worshipped the sun god too, because their prosperity depended on productivity of their crops and livestock. From the Babylonian, Assyrian, and Phoenician civilizations of the Middle East, their mystery religions come from the same point origin. The cult of Baal spread to distant civilizations such as the Celts, who observe Beltane rituals on May 1st. Beltane originates from the word Baal. While the observance of Baal rituals differed from one civilization to the other, they were nevertheless grounded in the same occult concepts of the numerology and sacrifice. In other words, they were all tapping into the same magical knowledge. Today's occult elite still observe these rites, but with one major difference. They are now carried out on unsuspecting civilians and spread across the world through mass media, fed and amplified by the fear and trauma of the masses. These mega rituals are seen by all, but only celebrated by the occult elite. More than ever, we are dealing with black magic. Another article here briefly describes the elements required to carry out the elite's mega rituals. Quote, "The human sacrifice required during many of these occult dates need to contain the following elements, each one of which is exaggerated to the highest possible degree. Number one, trauma, stress, mental anguish, sheer terror. Number two, the final act in the drama should be destruction by a fire, preferably a conflagration. Number three, people must die as human sacrifices, especially children, since the darkness views the younger human sacrifice as most desirable." That's in an article, Advent of Deception. In conclusion, those who know about occult calendars enter the second half of April wondering if something horrific is about to happen. Sadly, every few years it does, and the public is traumatized with a senseless and violent event. Almost every time, a closer look at the event leads to strange and suspicious facts, and more often than not, hints toward an inside job. While many will ascribe the occurrence of these events during the end of April to coincidence, the fact remains, mass violent events involving death and fire happen regularly during the same period that is occultly dedicated to Baal, who is worshipped through fire and human sacrifice. Whether this is all done on purpose or just the result of some crazy universal synchronicity, the fact is still there and cannot be disputed. We talked in April about UN Agenda 21 with guest Pauline Cantwell of AWorldAlert.com. The United Nations agenda for the 21st century is a global plan that is creeping into regions of the United States and North America. This is all being done under the guise of environmentalism, and the groundwork has already been laid down here in New York City. The use of buzzwords are important. Remember those words we talked about in April? The ones that leave you with that positive, it must be okay feeling. Words like smart, livable, walkable, vibrant, bikeable, consensus, community, sustainable, carbon footprint, green. Yet across the country, individuals are losing their rights to private property, land and water, as cities are replanned for high-density urban development and smart growth. We talk again about the tentacles of ICLEI, the International Council of Local Environmental Initiatives, which is tasked with carrying out the goals of the UN Agenda 21 locally and using taxpayer money. You see, what people are taking notice of is how millions in taxpayer revenue is being used to fund these plans. People are fighting back, says our guest Rosa Corey, author of Behind the Green Mask, but it's not easy. Rosa talks from experience. She's a forensic commercial real estate appraiser and has gone through massive battles with neighborhood groups, lawsuits against the city of Santa Rosa in the San Francisco Bay Area, and she's been traveling around the country sharing her story. Rosa asks if we will be living in smart growth slums, traveling on buses routed only where we're permitted to go, and will you be restricted to working in transit villages? It's a powerful book that really does expose what's behind the mask and shows what you can do to fight back. Rosa Corey is the executive director of the Post-Sustainability Institute, where she studies the impacts of Agenda 21 sustainable development, and she runs the website Democrats Against UN Agenda 21. Rosa, welcome to Another News. Well, it's great to have you here. Now, can you give listeners a little bit of a background on what UN Agenda 21 is and how it got into the U.S.?
Sure. The thing about Agenda 21, the agenda for the 21st century, is that it's a blueprint. It is the action plan to inventory and control all water, all land, all minerals, all plants, all animals, all energy, all means of production, all information, and all human beings in the world. It is an inventory and control plan. And, of course, everyone knows that it's a real thing. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's not Area 51 or Catch 22. It was signed on to by George H.W. Bush, along with 178 other national leaders around the world in 1992 at the United Nations Earth Summit. And it is a soft law. And it came into the United States. Of course, it was Clinton created the President's Council on Sustainable Development later when he was elected in late 92 and then came into office in 93. Mm-hmm. By June of 93, he had created the President's Council on Sustainable Development, and that was solely purposed with implementing United Nations Agenda 21, Sustainable Development, in the United States. And it's not that it's filtering in to your city or your county or your state right now. It is fully entrenched all across the United States right now.
Oh, that's what I wanted to ask you also is, for somebody living in a small town, what does Agenda 21 look like?
Mm-hmm. Well, you'll see it in many different ways. You'll see it as a scenic byway, for instance. You'll see it as your town 2025, our city, our vision, our future. You'll see it as a land use plan. You'll see it as a general plan. Your master plan is changing. You'll see it as smart growth, transportation tax dollars, and property tax dollars used to supplement high-density housing in the center of your city. You'll see areas of your city rezoned to mixed use or transit village without your knowledge. If you own property in those areas and you go to do something with your property, you'll find that you aren't able to do what you thought you could with it. It's not what it was zoned for before. In fact, the use has changed. And this is something, it's a stealth plan, but it operates in plain sight. And it definitely depends on people not being aware that it's happening. But those days are over, and we are definitely aware, and we're doing everything we can to stop it.
I wondered about that, and you have quite a fascinating story of how you became aware of the United Nations Agenda 21 in your book, Behind the Green Mask. And our guest is Rosa Corey. Rosa, can you tell listeners how you became aware of this?
Yeah, well, first I want to say, you know, a lot of times people hear about this. They're either they're thinking that, you know, it's kind of a conservative, maybe a right-wing thing. It's not. It's a nonpartisan issue. I am a Democrat and have been since 1974. I'm a commercial real estate appraiser. I was a district branch chief for the Department of Transportation in California for 30 years, and I'm an expert witness, litigation support person. So, of course, my work involves land use and land value. And besides that, personally, I've been a political activist, active in gay rights, pro-choice, anti-war. And during that time that I was, being kind of made aware of something happening in land use, it seemed like there was a planning revolution going on. Because when I went into planning departments to find out what people could do with their properties so I could value it, it looked like there wasn't really anything that people could do by right, and that was over the last 10 years. And at that same, during that period, I was elected to a Citizens Oversight Committee for a project area committee for a huge redevelopment project in my town. Mm-hmm. And when I became involved with, you know, sitting on that committee, I found that it was a fraudulent project. It was corrupt, and being, you know, as a whistleblower, I was marginalized, attacked, unbelievable, kind of people coming out of the woodwork to malign and try to embarrass me, try to get me to lose my job. And the thing that shocked me mainly about it was that these were people that I would have expected to make common cause with, people that I thought would have been my allies. So,
sorry to laugh, but it is such a story, listeners, in her book, Behind the Green Mask. It's really told in detail, and Rosa Corey, our guest here, is just summarizing the story. And I wanted to just even plug in for a second that the did you find out even then where the money was coming from to fund this redevelopment plan?
Well, you know, that's an interesting thing because redevelopment, and in some areas it's called urban renewal, but they use your property tax dollars to fund smart growth. And smart growth is the preferred development style for United Nations Agenda 21 Sustainable Development. And it's not just a development style, it's actually an ideology. And when I started, when I looked at who was attacking me, And it was so interesting because it was environmental groups, people on the left like myself, Democratic groups, unions. And when I was, so I put all that together, and then when I did my research, I found that there was something behind it, and that was United Nations Agenda 21 Sustainable Development.
And there are articles out there that talk about how people are overreacting and they are making it a partisan issue. There was an article talking about people resisting Agenda 21 a few months ago, and in it a community development manager from Oklahoma was quoted as saying, "I can understand how people in some cases may be fearful of government, but where it loses steam is they give cities and government a little too much credit. We certainly don't have the money or political will to hurt or harm or take private property."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a...
Yeah.
That's a lie, actually. And you're going to see a lot of that because this, you know, this is what it looks like in your town is primarily a land use plan. And it has been backed and pushed and funded by the American Planning Association. And the American Planning Association just put out a 12-week-long boot camp for planners to re-educate them in how to deal with people like me who are telling the truth about what's going on. And so it sounds to me like this person has attended that 12-week-long boot camp where they were told to inoculate elected officials, to push the concept that planning is essential for economic recovery and jobs, and to say that anyone who would point out that this is all related to basically a corporatocracy totalitarian takeover is sort of a tinfoil hat. And, you know, the fact that, I mean, I've been accused of having a, fundamental fear of government, which is ridiculous considering I spent my entire career working for a government agency. So I think that, you know, when you're talking about a disinformation campaign, a propaganda campaign, you'll find that they'll just pull out all the stops to attack individuals rather than deal with the issues. And that's something that we need to point out and stop.
It's really easy to do. The systems are in place. The people are paid off, as you pointed out in your book, to do that. And there's something called the Delphi technique that's used in the types of meetings that pull people together. But that means the Delphi technique means the meeting has already been really the outcome of the meeting has been pre-approved. Mm-hmm. But they're really they just want to see who the people are that's involved. They want to take the data. And a lot more. Can you describe what that is and how people can understand the depth of manipulation here?
Sure. And this is, you know, this is just so fascinating because the way this works, you know, is a land use plan. Often you'll see it, you know, it's something happening in your town. You're invited to come on down and give your opinion on vision, your town, you know, on your town 2025 or whatever it is. And it's always, you know, going to be a smart growth plan, which is high density development in the center of your city, subsidized with your tax dollars. And you'll be invited to come on down and give your opinion. And really, you know, these plans are dependent on the illusion of community buy-in because the concern is that when the citizenry wakes up and recognizes how manipulated they're being, that they're going to get angry, which is exactly right. And so what they want to do, what your government is doing, is manipulating you so that they can say that this is your plan. And so what they're using is a RAND Corporation mind control technique from the Cold War era, and it's called the Delphi technique. Mm-hmm. And it is it's something that they teach facilitators, meeting managers in college and in schools. You can be trained in this, right? And what it is it's it's the new consensus, which is neutralization of the opposition. And it's a way of bringing people in to solicit their opinion, supposedly. But they're given the illusion of having an influence on the plan that has already been fully determined and laid out before they walked in the room. And while they are giving their opinion, they are being given the illusion that they are having an influence on it and that it is their plan. So it's giving people the sense that, yes, they're developing the plan and their point of view is being heard. But in fact, it is not. And this is happening all across the United States. You'll see it when you walk into a government plan meeting and you'll see those little tables where you're supposed to have your crayons and your gold stars and, you know, color on someone else's property your vision of what you'd like to see there.
Oh,
and this is really a plan to take away private property rights. And, you know, I want to remind people that we are our own private property. Our most important private property is our bodies. And this is a plan that actually takes away your personal sovereignty and the sovereignty of our country. And, you know, I'm telling you, I'm a liberal Democrat. And this is, you know, this is an issue for Democrats as well. We own property. We have, you know, our intellectual property, our bodies. And when you're looking at issues like smart meters and that which is part of Agenda 21, Sustainable Development.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at the 1%. This is a corporatocracy takeover, a corporate takeover, global governance.
Mm-hmm.
Food independence, that's another thing that you're going to see. This is part of it, to create total dependence on government. Banks, bank manipulations, this is a bank plan. This is a plan to sink your economy and create total poverty in the United States. What's unsustainable? Single-family residences, vehicles, private vehicles, air conditioning, appliances.
Air conditioning?
Yes.
Not on days like this. Oh,
mm-hmm.
my God.
That's right. Air conditioning and dams, reservoirs. So when you're looking at things like that, you're talking about something that is, you know, basically our affluent middle-class lifestyle is considered unsustainable. And you're given this, you know, you're being told a lot of people live in urban areas. The more people who live in urban areas, the less people there are who know how much land there is in the United States. We are an agricultural country. There's a tremendous amount of open land in the U.S. And we are being, you know, those of us who are in cities are being indoctrinated and propagandized with this story that we're destroying and using up nature. And this is simply not true.
That was part of an interview with Rosa Corey, a former forensic real estate appraiser and author of the book Behind the Green Mask.
Skies above would never fall, never fall, never fall. The skies above would never fall, never fall, never fall. No matter how much you love me, it don't matter how much you love me, it don't matter how much you love me, it don't matter how much you love me. The skies above would never fall, never fall, never fall. The skies above.
Go now to hear part of an interview with journalist Stacy Lynn. Let's have a listen. As many listeners know, the United Nations agenda for the 21st century is a global plan that's creeping into regions of the United States and North America. This is all being done under the guise of environmentalism, but also, in my opinion, through weather warfare and disaster capitalism. The use of buzzwords are important for this agenda, as we've pointed out in the past. Smart, livable, walkable, vibrant, bikeable, consensus, progressive, community, diversity, carbon footprint, vision, green. The UN Agenda 21 would implement multi-layered restrictions, such as limited access to electricity and transportation, and imposing unsustainable tax rates and arbitrarily seizing property for personal gain. Across the country, individuals are losing their rights to private property, land, and water, as cities are replanned for high density, urban development, and smart growth. We look at how ICLEI has systematically invaded the Fort Collins area of Colorado through the traumatic yet courageous story of investigative journalist Stacy Lynn. For 4 years, Stacy Lynn alerted her community about ICLEI. That's the International Council of Local Environmental Initiatives. She revealed how large amounts of taxpayer money is being spent annually. And in her work, she saved about 300 local jobs, scores of private businesses, by bringing awareness to ICLEI policies that were to be mainly voted on in secret. Oh, and New York City has the same sustainability plan as Fort Collins. By exposing the money trail, plus being successful in saving jobs and private businesses, she was retaliated against. Those people who retaliated were then exposed for their Agenda 21 business connections. It gets worse. Stacy's son was taken from her in what has been described as a complete miscarriage of justice. The twists and turns and her story are dramatic. Stacy Lynn, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, we've done a few shows on UN Agenda 21, ICLEI, and the various implementations such as smart meters. But can you remind listeners what Agenda 21 is and how you exposed it manifesting in the Fort Collins area of Larimer County, Colorado?
Yes, Agenda 21 is a program of the United Nations. It is focusing on the environment. A lot of the things they do is attempting to make the world a more sustainable place. And a lot of times you hear the word sustainability, and of course everybody wants clean water and clean air. If you have children, of course, you're worried about the future. So it's all placed under the basic guise of saving the planet. Carbon dioxide is the main focus, of course, and the interesting thing about carbon dioxide is if you look at the United States Department of Carbon Dioxide Information Analysis Center, they will actually tell you how much carbon dioxide is in Earth's atmosphere. And so as an investigative journalist, I wanted to know exactly why we were so focused on CO2 and why we were so interested in reducing those levels. The department actually says that the total amount of CO2 in Earth's atmosphere is 38/1,000th of 1%. So I started to wonder, why are we so interested in reducing that if it's such a small amount to begin with? And science also says that those levels are naturally decreasing. So what I came up with was I stumbled upon an organization called the International Council of Local Environmental Initiatives, and I ran into that through the City of Fort Collins website. I became interested in all of this because the City of Fort Collins began a large attack on small businesses that had been in Fort Collins for almost 100 years combined. And the questions I was asking the city and the answers I was getting didn't make sense, so I just started to delve into the motivation behind it. So the city was trying to eliminate privately owned trash companies, and they said that the city wanted to have all the same color trash containers. That was a little bit strange to me. I thought there must be something more behind it than that.
Mm-hmm.
So I did discover that the city of Fort Collins has been a member of ICLEI for almost 20 years. No official knew about the organization. Nobody in the city knew that we were a member of this international organization. And the interesting thing is, the way that it's implemented is through a sustainability plan or a long-term planning process. And about 5 years ago, I realized that New York City also has the exact same sustainability plan as Fort Collins was implementing. So I have done a lot of research around the United States trying to figure out the common threads and what the ultimate goals are with Agenda 21 and Local Agenda 21, which is known as ICLEI. As I was investigating this, I started speaking publicly, I started writing, and I did focus on the local governments in the state of Colorado. I began getting phone calls from all around the United States asking if I could help them as well. So I have a lot of knowledge about Agenda 21 and ICLEI throughout the U.S. and figured out ways to successfully defeat these policies that were hurting small businesses.
When was this, when this awareness kicked in on for you?
Well, I started wondering about what the city was doing to local businesses in 2008. It didn't take me long to figure out what was actually behind the plans and who was forcing these policies on small businesses. So 2008 is when I began the investigation. 2009, the city of Fort Collins had a major fight on its hands because I didn't think it was proper for the city to put these longtime business owners out. We were successful in protecting these small businesses. They're still in business today, nearly 4 years later. And I took that, the process that I learned from the Fort Collins trash fight, and started helping people around the state protect their small trash companies as well. ICLEI goes after trash companies as one of their first policies to implement locally because there's a lot of money involved and because they can make people feel guilty for having trash.
Oh, yes. I think some of that is happening here as well in New York City, and we'll get to that. And before we get into your personal story, if you could tell listeners some of the ways that you brought awareness to your community through writing articles, a newsletter, and some of the strategy maybe that could help other activists maybe here in New York City or other areas?
Yeah, that's a great question. The first thing I did was I began attending city council meetings. I had never been involved politically prior to the trash issue in Fort Collins, but I went to every single council meeting. I listened, I took notes, and I started asking questions. And the biggest thing people can do is ask questions about where the money is coming from, who stands to benefit from it, even, sadly, private companies who are ICLEI members can figure out how to get into the city and get special benefits and perks. So I started going to council meetings. I also started a small newspaper that I hand-delivered to the small business owners in Fort Collins. A lot of times small business owners don't have time to stay current on what the city government is doing, and a lot of times they vote and implement policies before the public even knows about it. So I became very vocal, wrote articles for the newspaper, the main newspaper in Fort Collins, and I was just relentless in helping people learn what these policies actually meant to them and how it would hurt them financially.
Now, you hand-delivered this paper. Why did you do that?
Well, it was a great way for me to get to know the business owners. I love small, locally owned business owners, and I support them as much as possible. So I got to meet a lot of really hardworking people who didn't know what was coming at them, and I wanted to give them a head start so that they could fight it before the votes were done.
I see. The important part here, what I see as strategically of what you're bringing awareness to, is the money trail. Was that a driver for bringing awareness?
Initially, it was not my main motivation, because I was more disturbed by what they were doing to the people, by how they were going to destroy nearly 300 local jobs. And I saw those people's faces every time I did my research and stood up and spoke. Those people were not going to have jobs if we did not stop this takeover. So it was the people that made me passionate initially, and then I started looking at the money. I actually took the budget from the city of Fort Collins. It's 300 pages long, and I dissected it. And I needed to know how much money was being spent on Agenda 21 and ICLEI programs versus fire, police, and roads. And that's when I became disturbed even more than what was happening to the people, because I found out that we were spending nearly $1 million to teach people how to feel when they were outside. And I know that's difficult to believe, but it's in our budget.
What does that mean exactly?
So they wanted to spend all of this money on programs that would teach children and even senior citizens how they were supposed to feel when they were walking down a trail in the woods. And I know New York City has a similar part of their budget that does similar things. So if you go to your budget, you will see a similar program to teach people how to feel outside when they're outdoors.
But in Fort Collins, it's near $1 million for this?
It's $835,000. That was our budget 2 years ago.
Is that an annual?
It is. It is. One of the reasons that I was looking at the money aspect was because a lot of times these sustainability policies actually hurt minority populations and disadvantaged populations. So then I wanted to see what is the city actually doing to hurt these populations. And here's one example. And remember, New York City has the exact same sustainability plan that Fort Collins has, so this applies. We were spending $1 million, nearly $1 million, on a bicycle program where the city would buy bicycles. Now, remember, that takes away from small bike shop owners. City buys bicycles, and then you can use a bicycle for free when you're in Fort Collins. But to use that bicycle, you have to have a credit card. So the people who would benefit the most from using a bicycle for free don't have access to it. You have to leave your credit card with the city so that that's the guarantee that you'll bring the bike back. But I don't know very many people who are struggling financially who actually have credit cards that are valid. So they can't even access this city program that they're actually paying for.
There was a lot of criticism with that plan here when it was suggested or proposed. I know you mentioned some of the successes that you had in stopping ICLEI-driven regulations in your area, but can you go down some of the lists of the prominent successes that you've had in maybe bringing awareness to temporarily prevent or completely stop some of the implementations?
Yes, the most fabulous success we had in Fort Collins was that we did save those private businesses. We still have 300 jobs that would not exist if the city would have successfully ended their businesses. I took that process and helped other communities in Colorado save the very same small business owners. So in Jefferson County, we saved 13 small businesses. I mean, that is an unbelievable success. And then I was writing papers to help other communities around the United States understand the process for how you expose ICLEI and Agenda 21, how you help elected officials learn about it, because honestly, most elected officials do not have the knowledge about the policies that they're voting on. Some of the officials do know, but it's a very secret topic. You just don't hear a lot of discussion about ICLEI or Agenda 21 in local governments. So you help your officials learn about it. You show them the money that is required to implement these policies. The city of Fort Collins actually had to increase our sales tax rate just to cover ICLEI and Agenda 21 programs. And another good example of that, so that you can start looking at your budgets, is we were spending $835,000 to teach people about the difference between a CFL light bulb and a incandescent light bulb. But the thing that the city was leaving out in their education program was the mercury toxicity in the CFL light bulbs. They did not explain to people or educate them about how to handle a CFL if it broke, what to do with children and women who are pregnant. There was no education in the risks. And that led me back to my concern for the people and my passion for helping people understand what these programs were actually doing to their life and the planet as a whole.
Great job. $835,000 a year to educate people on the difference between those curly light bulbs with mercury inside of them, which is a hazmat situation when they break, I understand.
Yes. And if you take it a little bit deeper and you think, okay, let's learn about the mercury that's inside these CFL light bulbs, and you find out where the light bulbs are manufactured, well, why are they, most of them, manufactured in China? And the answer is, sadly, because they don't have the health standards, health and safety standards that we have in the United States, so it's cheaper to produce them there. So then I wanted to know, well, how are we affecting the planet in China, and how are we affecting the people in China? And the answer is tragic. 95% of the people in China who are manufacturing these CFL light bulbs have mercury toxicity poisoning, and once you have it, you don't get rid of it. That's tragic to me, and I think people care. Turns out they do care.
Oh, they do care. Yet it is, it's in the budget, and there's no mention of this within the education of what these light bulbs contain. And there's an $800,000 a year expense for Collins. And I wonder if it's here in New York City as well, in other big cities, if it's there.
If you have a plan, a long-range sustainability plan, such as Plan Fort Collins or Plan New York City, it's in your budget, it's in the plan, and the most interesting thing that people were going to care about, when you learn that you are a member of this organization, you, your city, your local government has actually given authority to city employees that supersedes the authority of the elected officials. Now, you might be wondering, how is that possible, and how do the elected officials deal with that? Here's how it works. In your sustainability plan, let's say the parking management office has the authority, because your city council has adopted the plan, the parking employees have the authority to implement green parking spaces without a vote. So they can come into your downtown, take out 10 parking spaces, and restrict those only for green vehicles, without a vote of your city council members. That's how they transform local governments into not being run by the elected officials, but being run by city employees who have no accountability and most of the time no transparency.
And specifically in Colorado, was this another victory for you?
It was. I noticed downtown Fort Collins that Patricia Stryker, she's the billionaire heiress to the Stryker Medical Corporation. She built a new building downtown, and after it was finished, she took, I believe it was 8 parking spaces in front of her building and dedicated them to green vehicles only. Downtown Fort Collins is already very congested with traffic. Parking is always an issue, of course, and to lose those spaces was financially damaging to the surrounding small businesses, and this is why. Each of those parking spaces downtown is worth approximately $300,000 per year. That's a lot of money that they would be losing because still at this point most people cannot afford a green car. So they were restricting the access to these small businesses. So I went to the city council, talked to them about these parking spaces, and the city council didn't even have any knowledge of it. They didn't even know that 4 blocks from their city hall, they had lost 8 parking spaces for most of the people to use. So they were, of course, irritated that they weren't aware of it. They asked how that had happened, and I told them to look on page 35 of their sustainability plan, and it gave the authority to the parking employees to make those decisions without any knowledge of the city council. And I know that's difficult to believe, but our elected officials have been stripped of their power and their authority. Got the spaces removed. There was an outcry, a public outcry, and the spaces in front of Pat Stryker's building are now accessible to all people.
Let's get into the retaliation here. When you become effective in stopping some of these ICLEI and Agenda 21 implementations in your area, you get attention, and some of it isn't good. Can you talk about how you were retaliated against and when this happened?
Yes, the first major retaliation occurred in 2010. I had attempted to recall a city council member because she supported this foreign organization, and she also supported the publicly and very loudly supported the elimination of these small business owners. So I thought a recall definitely was warranted. She had violated her oath to the United States Constitution, and I know that doesn't mean a lot to people, but a lot of people really do care about that still. So I attempted a recall. It was not successful because it's very difficult to recall an elected official. However, that did accomplish a major goal, and we actually got ICLEI mentioned in the local newspaper for the first time ever in 20 years. So that got us great exposure to Agenda 21 and ICLEI. But the first retaliation that came my way was a very powerful environmental lawyer firm came after me because the city manager in Fort Collins, now these are his words, heard an anonymous rumor at an anonymous event by an anonymous person who said that I had taken money for the recall against ethical standards. So this attorney firm came after me. Of course, they spent almost $5,000 of taxpayer money investigating me, and they found no wrongdoing. Because I don't do things wrong, and I know the law, and I follow the law. And this is actually a good time for me to say this. I am not an attorney, and anything I say during this interview is not to be construed as legal advice. I do not give legal advice. However, everything I say is true and can be verified.
Great. Thanks for pointing that out. I want to just mention that there's usually that one city council member that is funded through ICLEI. And I know talking with some people in Suffolk County, they've identified that person in the Suffolk County legislature. To your knowledge, is that what's going on? Because I remember Rosa Corey, author of Behind the Green Mask, had mentioned that there's usually one person that gets elected and is funded through the UN.
Yes, that's the interesting thing. In Fort Collins, we don't have any direct ties to funding to the elected officials. But when you look at the city departments, we have probably 30 employees in about 30 employees in 5 city departments who are funded directly by ICLEI programs. That is a massive amount of money. And most of the policies that ICLEI is promoting cost the taxpayers millions upon millions of dollars for no real gain.
You identified that city council member, and there was retaliation. Now, it goes further. Can you then describe what happened after that?
Yes. So after the investigation by the law firm, no wrongdoing was found. I didn't stop, of course. I kept speaking publicly. I would have private businesses throughout the state invite me to speak to their private employees, and those were fabulous conversations. I was able to help a lot of people learn really what was going on underneath the surface and why we were spending so much money on these programs that didn't make sense. I moved my focus south of Larimer County, where Fort Collins is located, because the pressure was quite extreme. And I won't go into the physical things they were doing to me, but I moved south, even though I still lived in the area. And we had a major success in Jefferson County, and that was when we saved the 13 small business owners from being eliminated by their city council. After that success, I thought, you know, this is going to hurt. This one is probably going to affect me a lot worse than some investigation. I had also been testifying at the Capitol on a bill that was to protect small business owners exactly against Agenda 21 and ICLEI. The major opponent that I was testifying against there was Waste Management. Of course, I had already blocked them from taking over nearly 15 small trash companies. They were not pleased with my success. And it turns out that Waste Management is a major funder for ICLEI, so we have one connection there that is a direct indication of retaliation.
Investigative journalist Stacy Lynn exposing the corruption of those involved with ICLEI and Agenda 21 in her area. That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. See you next week, Monday night, 10 p.m.